private superannuation or pension vehicle. So in Australia, we have a regime where employees are entitled to receive 9.5% of the value of their salary and wages contributed into the superannuation system on their behalf by their employer. Now, that money will frequently go into retail funds or industry funds or an employer fund. But it can also go to a private fund. And so we might have Anne Family Superannuation Fund. And Anne and her family members are the owners of that fund. They're the beneficiaries of it. And they also control it. And that's a key reason for the existence of self-managed super funds or attractions, as you said, is that there is control. Because, of course, if my salary and wages or my personal private contributions to superannuation are going to an industry or third-party fund, someone else makes the decisions about how that money is invested, whether it's in shares, in cash, in fixed interest, infrastructure assets, or something else. But if it goes to my private superannuation fund, if, for instance, Anne Family Super Fund, then Anne and her family make decisions about how that's invested.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy, with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Anne Nelson, your host for today's show. When it comes to our retirement savings, we have the opportunity to do that in many ways, provide for our future. We are encouraged by different governments to put them into structures that are tax effective. It keeps us from spending it too early because we can't take it out before we get to a certain age. They encourage us to use these structures so that we are less of a burden on the government in our old age. But who's got our back as far as being able to make sure that the government policies and regulations are fair? Today's guest, Chris Belovosky, is the chairman of the SISFA, which is the Self-Managed Independent Superannuation Funds of Australia. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you very much, Anne. Great to be here.
There would be some listeners not familiar with the term superannuation and SMSF or self-managed superannuation funds. Would you be able to give us a background on this yourself and your role with the SISFA organisation?
Sure. Thanks, Anne. I am an accountant and a lawyer by background and qualification, and I've been in practice for over 31 years, and a lot of that time has been with regard to advising individuals on their superannuation affair. The role that I occupy is chairman of SISFA, and as such, I am responsible for ensuring that the organisation promotes and advocates the interests of self-managed super funds, the owners of self-managed super funds, as well as their advisors, who are people like accountants and lawyers and financial planners, in order to protect the $660 billion that's invested via self-managed super fund.
$660 billion, that's a big number. How many funds are there in Australia now?
And there are approximately 600,000 SMSFs, and if I can use that acronym just for ease, 600,000 SMSFs. They are increasing rapidly, and I think the rate is about 25,000 new registrations a month. And if you do a simple mathematical calculation, over $660 billion in 600,000 SMSFs means that they've got an average of a little bit over $1 million invested in each of them.
Wow. The government's done a good job of encouraging us to save for our retirement going by those numbers. This is the tax structure that is favourable for putting away funds for retirement in Australia. It's a bit similar to a 401k in the US.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Anne. Maybe we can refer to SMSFs as a private superannuation or pension vehicle. So in Australia, we have a regime where employees are entitled to receive 9.5% of the value of their salary and wages contributed into the superannuation system on their behalf by their employer. Now, that money will frequently go into retail funds or industry funds or an employer fund, but it can also go to a private fund. And so we might have Anne's Family Superannuation Fund, and Anne and her family members are the owners of that fund, they're the beneficiaries of it, and they also control it. And that's a key reason for the existence of self-managed super funds or attractions, as you said, is that there is control. Because, of course, if my salary and wages or my personal private contributions to superannuation are going to an industry or third-party fund, someone else makes the decisions about how that money is invested, whether it's in shares, in cash, in fixed interest, infrastructure assets or something else. But if it goes to my private superannuation fund, if for instance Anne Family Super Fund, then Anne and her family make decisions about how that's invested. And provided that there is a properly prepared investment strategy that takes into consideration risk, liquidity, diversification and other matters, then Anne and her family are in control of how those investments are made as opposed to someone else. You've also mentioned something else, and that is the tax advantage. Mm-hmm. Now, self-managed super funds do not carry any tax advantage that's in addition to any other type of fund. Now, the Australian superannuation regime is very tax concessional in that we can suffer a maximum of 15% tax in the fund ordinarily, and sometimes even as low as 0% tax in the fund. And that's a very attractive option for growing and preserving wealth.
If you were in the highest income tax bracket, then I imagine saving for your retirement would be a good option instead of paying a large chunk of your earnings in tax.
Again, absolutely right, Anne. Unfortunately, an individual can suffer as much as close to a 50% personal income tax rate when they earn income in their own right, in their own name, whether it be from investments or from salary and wages or from capital gain, for example. But if we structure individual affairs so that this income is derived in super, as I said, 15% maximum tax or potentially zero. And the tax concession, therefore, is so attractive that the incentive to get as much into super is very strong. And this is one of the reasons why the Department of Treasury and the federal government changed the rules from 1 July last year, 2017, to ensure that there is less, in fact, that individuals can get into superannuation environments or have earnings 0% tax or a concessional tax rate in super.
That's the problem with successive governments. We won't know what they're going to change next.
I think it would be naive to expect that there won't be any further changes. A $660 billion pot of money, that's in self-managed super funds. But if we talk about superannuation more broadly, the other types of funds included, And the Australian savings pool is currently somewhere around $2.4 trillion for the T. Now, that represents the fourth largest retirement savings pool in the world. You know, well ahead of many countries with significantly larger populations than Australia. Now, it's naive to think that the Australian government of any political persuasion, doesn't have their eyes on that honeypot and that they won't change the rules at some time. So it's inevitable that the rules will change. But there will always be a tax advantage to investing via super and saving via super. Otherwise, there just isn't a superannuation system. The whole thing fails.
It's the reason why the Australian government brought this system in so that its citizens could save for and provide for their own retirement.
Absolutely right. And, you know, there's a delicate balancing act there between providing incentives for people to save for their own retirement so that they don't depend on the age pension and throwing out the baby with the bathwater by having people by birth what would ordinarily be taxed in their own name and which might be an excessive amount into the superannuation environment. So, for example, it's a known fact that there are a number of self-managed super funds in Australia with well in excess of $100 million in savings. $100 million in savings for an individual or their close family group, three other members of their family. And that, I think, we all might acknowledge is more than adequate for someone to retire on. So where does the government draw the line there? Does it allow unlimited savings in super, $100 million plus, or does it cap it in some way? And that's what they've done, essentially, with some changes that occurred on 1 July 2017.
This will have to be revisited every year, then, if they're going to tell us how much we can have in there, because over time we have to deal with inflation.
You're absolutely right. Again, it's constant vigilance. Irrespective of how an individual has saved for their retirement and what sort of vehicles they use, even simple structures such as just in their own name, my view is that having professional advice, ongoing professional advice, is essential because in the same way that I am predicting the rules with regard to the taxation of super will change, you can also bet the rules with regard to the taxation of individuals and private companies and family trusts will also change. That's inevitable as well. And it just depends on, you know, how big budget black holes are and where the government thinks they'll get the least amount of hissing when it comes to election time.
Can you explain the role of SISFA? How many members does your organisation represent, and explain the need that SISFA fills?
Sure. SISFA exists, as I said earlier, to provide education and advocacy services to the trustees, that is the members, the private individuals who own and operate self-managed super funds, as well as to their advisors, their accountants, their lawyers, their financial planners. And we do that by providing information materials, which can be face-to-face or written materials and online, as well as dealing with the relevant government departments and agencies. So this morning, for example, I had a telephone conversation with Minister O'Dwyer's office with regard to the changes that I've just talked about, how it took effect on 1 July 2017, and whether the industry or the sector was seeing any problems with regard to their implementation. So we advocate and lobby on behalf of simplifying the system, but very importantly, protecting those savings as well, and mounting strong arguments for the way the laws should be drafted. Sometimes we're listened to, and sometimes we're not, and the way that the laws are then administered as well by the relevant authorities.
How can a trustee of a self-managed super fund structure protect themselves?
Good question, because protection, you know, might have to be from unscrupulous third parties protection might be from the regulator as well, the tax office. Protection might also be just from governments, and you've already alluded to the fact that governments might have their eyes on the prize as well. So our advocacy services will decide to protect the pie, to protect the pot of gold from unfair attacks by governments with biased laws. Protection from unscrupulous third parties, such as poor advisors or making unwise investments, is something that will only really occur by education and individuals knowing what their rights and obligations are and how to make informed decisions about investing and how to run and operate their fund. Protection from the regulator, which is the tax office, because the tax office has very, very wide powers to penalise the trustees, a self-managed super fund personally, and the fund itself as well. And it can be devastating for the individuals and, of course, their wealth that might have been saved. Again, education services to ensure that those individuals operating their SMSF in accordance with the law, which can be complicated. But then there are also insurers, and I'm happy to say that at CISPA we do have an insurance offering that when and if the Commissioner of Taxation knocks on the door and penalises individuals or their fund, then a certain degree of insurance protection is available to mitigate any losses and penalties.
What can the tax office do to you? Can they fine you or can they actually take away your fund? What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah. Some of the types of breaches are considered so serious, Anne, that they can result in prosecution and imprisonment. And there are an increasing number of cases where that's happening. But that's extreme. That's in situations where there's deliberate fraud, for example, or theft, or illegal early access to funds. And so if individuals are sucking all the money out of a self-managed super fund and using it to buy lifestyle assets, jet skis and holidays and parties, well, that's a pretty serious offence and a clear breach of the law and a prosecutable offence, and people have been in prison for that sort of activity. So it's not recommended. Then, of course, there are far less serious offences and things that might occur because of either carelessness or a disregard for what the law is. In those circumstances, there are various types of actions available to the Commissioner, and they might range from being instructed to undertake a course of education. And it might be a brief session, a couple of sessions, and the individual learns a little bit more about the rules of how a self-managed student fund can invest. It can be escalated from there to financial penalties applying to the individual, administrative penalties. It can then be escalated to pecuniary penalties, which means penalties that are designed to deter, not just to recover any taxes that might have been payable, but to deter, a punishment type penalty. All the way through to the fund being declared non-compliant, and the consequence of that is very, very severe, and it can mean that a half of the value of the assets of the fund, a half of the value of the assets of the fund can be payable as a penalty tax.
Well, we all have to make sure we're doing the right thing then. Don't want to lose money through unnecessary penalties. What is the age now that we can access our retirement savings from these funds?
Yep. So, the important part of the superannuation system, Anne, is that in order to get the tax concessions that I'm talking about, that there is a price to pay for that, and that is that the money is locked away and inaccessible unless what's known as a condition of release is satisfied. And there are numerous conditions of release that an individual might be able to prove, but typically they will relate to an age condition or a retirement from the workforce, a permanent retirement from the workforce condition being satisfied. Then, of course, there are other more drastic ways of satisfying conditional release, such as disability, permanent or temporary, as well as death. And of course, I don't advocate that anyone try to access their funds by satisfying a condition of release, that is death. The age condition is, the very minimum age is 55, and surprisingly, we don't have to do too much more to satisfy that condition of release, because we can commence to access our funds in the form of a particular type of pension known as transition to retirement from age 55 onward. Now, if we're not going to be in that category of a transition to retirement pension and we want an ordinary pension or to draw down lump sums of our money whenever we like, then the condition is generally age 60 and retired from a particular role, or age 65 full stop. Being age 65, no other condition needs to be satisfied and we've got full access to our money.
With the CISFA organisation, are you allowed to recommend service providers to members?
Yes, and one of our other objectives, peripheral to education and advocacy, is to introduce our members to relevant service providers. And although we don't recommend, what we do is we introduce various types of services and try to arrange discounts or special rates for our members. So that might be with regard to accounting services, investment advice services, insurance, which I've already mentioned, third-party education service providers, and we're looking at broader types of services that might be relevant to self-managed super fund individuals.
What about software that members could use to keep track of their investments?
I'm working on one such arrangement right now, so I can't say who it's with precisely that. And we'd be making that introduction and saying to our members, look, this service might be relevant for you, and hopefully we've negotiated a discount for our members with that software that assists them to manage the financial affairs and reporting affairs of their self-managed super fund.
Can you give me a snapshot of where the trustees of these self-managed super funds have invested their money?
The latest statistics indicate that a trend is continuing, and it's been a several decades long trend, of the majority of, or the highest proportion of self-managed super fund savings being invested in cash and term deposits. And, there's all sorts of good reasons for that, and I won't comment on whether it's appropriate at all, but it is a fact that it's been the largest investment proportion of self-managed super funds for decades. Next is equities, which is Australian shares typically, and they might be direct shares in the BHPs and Rio Tintos and Coca-Colas of the world, or indirect shares, which is managed fund style investment. And the next thing is cool. Then coming after that is real property, and real property of all types and descriptions, including commercial, rural, and residential.
To finish up now, could you explain again why trustees of the self-managed super funds should be members of CISFA?
There is no doubt, Anne, that the Commissioner of Taxation, as the regulator of self-managed super funds, is starting to increase his enforcement activity. There is no doubt that the laws surrounding the administration of self-managed super funds are more complex than ever before and will continue to become more complex, unfortunately. It's inevitable. It means that the chances of either inadvertent breach or a careless breach are increasing, and individuals need some form of assistance with managing their own funds in that sense. And it also means that because of the increasing enforcement activity of the Commissioner of Taxation, that the chances of those breaches being detected and penalised by the Commissioner are increasing all the time as well. And the Commissioner is no longer in honeymoon phase. He's becoming more aggressive with self-managed super funds. So in order for individuals to better protect themselves to never fall foul in the first place, then they really need self-education, which can come from membership of CISPA, or if they have an advisor, then at least assuring themselves that their advisor is a member of CISPA or is appropriately qualified to be able to ensure that their fund is not going to breach in this increased enforcement and complex environment.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's always interesting talking to people like yourself. We need to keep in touch, keep in the know. We have been listening to Chris Belolowski, Chairman of the Self-Managed Independent Superannuation Funds Association, here on the Retire Well, Retire Happy podcast show with Ann Nelson. Until next time.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.